The Boulay Brothers Dracula, a reality TV show where 11 doomed contestants battle it out to become the world's next drag super monster, is now streaming season 3 on Amazon Prime. Back again as a guest judge for the third time this round is horror queen Peaches Christ, who isn't afraid to tell a drag queen that her drag is so bad, it's good bad drag.
Today, Peaches Christ joins us to take us behind the scenes of the third season of Dracula and co-hosting with punk performance legend Henry Rollins. Plus, LA drag queen Johnny Reinhart read disgraced anti-gay closeted Republican congressman Aaron Schock when he showed up at her bar.
And what to expect at Terror Vault, Peaches Christ's immersive experience at the San Francisco Mint. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of the support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Become a member and listen to 14 years of amazing podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. Or put a tip in our tip jar and make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Thank you for your support.
Hello?
Miss Peaches Christ!
Just one moment, please. Hello?
Hi!
Hey, how are you guys?
I'm great. Doing great.
I'm great, too. How are you?
Very good.
Yeah. It was fun to see you in the latest episode of the Boulay Brothers Dracula as a guest judge.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. One of only two people to be a judge on all three seasons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a very big honor.
And I feel like it was so good they dropped it early, right?
It was sort of a surprise to me because I was trying to watch episode 2 and there was, I don't know, some sort of kerfuffle with Amazon Prime and like it wasn't showing up for us. And then I got an email from Ian, their manager, saying, hey, girl, episode 3 is being dropped today, later today. So I was completely shocked, you know. So I don't know. I think it was sort of like a surprise.
Oh, Ian, he is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah, he's so sweet.
He's wonderful. We met him at Austin, Texas, and the Boulay brothers
snatched
him up. They put him in a cage and said, you're our slave now.
I forgot that's where they did do that. He was sort of he was driving me around.
Yeah, for the festival. There was a drag festival there.
I could have snatched him up, but the Boulay brothers did. They kidnapped him.
It seems kind of unusual to meet somebody in another town in a gig and convince them to move to your city. I mean, they live in LA.
Well, have you seen Ian? Come on.
Yeah, Ian was destined to be in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, so the Boulay brothers had the upper hand there.
For people who are not familiar who Ian is, Ian was the hunk. And also is a very capable person behind the scenes of the second season of Dracula. In the scenes in the desert where he's murdered.
He was the killer in a bunch of the episode with me and Coco Peru.
Yeah.
He's in a bunch of there. The girls had to make like their own slasher movie or their own horror movie. And Ian is in a bunch of those.
It must be very satisfying to murder drag queens.
Why?
Well, you know, she had it coming.
Why?
She had it coming down the line.
I always knew you felt that way.
You work with drag queens for a while and, you know, it's inevitable, isn't it?
There's a few that I've wanted to kill over the years. That's true.
Mm-hmm. You said yourself that, we had been punished enough.
It's true. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to kill anybody, I think you want something somebody who's really going to give it their all. You know, you want a victim that's just they're going to look fierce. They're going to scream like a banshee.
Well, this is the thing. And I want you to talk about Peaches because I have friends, Rue Girls, Vivacious, who absolutely detest Dracula and I think part of it, she doesn't get the double entendre, the play the violent, the playful violence of horror and how it dovetails into queer culture. And you do.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, who cares? Like, so Dracula's not for Vivacious. Who gives a shit?
But Fausto wants to convert her to
he's well, part like, of it is, I think it's really, it's a wonderful show. And
I kind of like that Dracula's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. I like that my stuff, the stuff I make, is not for everybody. You know, I think that's, I mean, God, let's not fight to make drag for everybody or every kind of drag, you know, like.
Especially Rue Girls.
Even by calling them all Rue Girls, I think we're again doing them and each other a disservice. Sure. You know, they're individuals. Like, these are artists. You know, I don't think you can, you know, Vivacious is fabulous in her own way, and it's a totally different way than Sasha Velour is, you know, or Trixie Mattel. And it's like, so yeah, they're all Rue Girls. They all went on a TV show. But drag is still art, you know, which I love that the Boulay brothers basically spell it out when they're, you know, about to give their critiques. Drag is art. It's subjective. That's not what they're there to judge. They're judging their drag as it relates to the competition. And, you know, I really appreciate that, because whether these girls go, because this is the thing, all of these shows succeed because of the artists and the artistry that are brought in to help make this kind of television. You know, if it were up to the producers alone to figure out what makes a good drag queen, you know, it'd probably be really boring.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize that the Boulay brothers are very much in the community. They travel extensively. They go out of their way to meet people. And that shows in the quality of the talent they're able to invite onto the series.
And they came up through the nightlife scene. You know, their story is so interesting. I mean, getting back to the Ian thing, I'll just wrap that up really quickly. I remember now what happened. So adorable little Ian drove, he's not little, he's a big muscle queen, but he drove us around. I think all of us drag queens, you know, had a crush on him for the obvious reasons. But then he, you know, delivered as far as being smart, capable, communicating correctly. I'm telling you, these are unusual things when you go to a lot of this stuff. Like, he knew what was going on. He was the stage manager for the Dracula show they did, where Christine and I were the judges. And he ran that. He stage managed that show so flawlessly. And now I remember, he was very upfront about wanting to move to Los Angeles. And the Boulay brothers smartly said, "You move to Los Angeles, we're going to give you a job." And that's how it worked. Mm. So, you know, like, hard work and being good at your job on top of being attractive can go a long way.
Well, and so the Boulay brothers started Dracula, the TV series, as a way to sort of dovetail to the regular night that they were doing in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And not just in Los Angeles, they were also regularly bringing Dracula to San Francisco. So it had a home in San Francisco for a while at the Eagle, as well as Oasis when Oasis opened. And then they had their show in LA. And I think it was at different venues down there. And if I remember correctly, they did attempt to do Dracula, the nightclub, even after starting the reality TV show. And then it segued into, okay, we're just doing the TV show, and we're going to have this other nightclub called Queen Kong.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Which they just ended, and now Dracula's on the road. I see it's coming to Chicago next month.
Yeah.
The Boulay brothers are not just brothers. They're also husbands. They're married to each other.
Well, it's incest, so yeah.
Brothers, lovers, both?
Dragcest.
Yeah, they're brothers who got married, and they have sex together.
Sister Dick does not make you sick.
Yeah, they have intercourse. So there's that. You're watching Dracula, picture it.
I heard the origin story of the Boulay brothers is that they used to be one vampire, and then some messy drag queen tried to kill them by cutting them in half, and then
no, they cut off the head of the
they
one.
Cut off the head, and two grew up like Hydra.
Oh my God. I love them so, so much. And I am so proud of them.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're kindred spirits in a way because we obviously like a lot of the same stuff. We love the same aesthetic. We also are both performers and producers. And mm-hmm. I think there's a certain thing when you do both, there's a certain kind of understanding that we have of each other because it is so much work and it is so hard. And just the sheer amount of content that they create and the amount of things they do. I mean, of course, there are two of them. There's only one of me, you know, but I'm in awe of how much they put out and how much they do. And I think if you look at their show in three seasons, and this is really, truly independently produced content, they made this happen. They created it. It's astounding to see how it's evolved in three seasons. That first season was like, you know what? We got some cameras. We got some microphones. Let's just do this. And it was entertaining. Second season, production values, you know, like went up quite a bit. Taking the girls on the road, bringing us to the fucking woods, you know, for 15 hours. It was, you know, they really were ambitious. And then the third season, I mean, it looks like they have big money behind it. And it's them. It's just them, you know.
It's really astounding. And certainly, you know, we're big fans of Louisiana Purchase. And
me too. You know, oh, my God.
So it's going to be hard.
I don't know who's on the show until the girls come out.
Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to see how the drag queens are underestimating Louisiana Purchase because they don't know what we know.
You know? I know. And I knew. And, you know, they edited me. So, I mean, I'm fine with the way they edited me. I'm not complaining. But I loved in the commercial for my episode, all you hear me say is, you do bad drag. You know, and that was sort of the clip that they ran. And so before the show came out, I was like, oh God, I don't really remember exactly what I said. But then when they were doing the runway, and she very much looked like a slutty Ms. Hannigan, like mm-hmm. in her runway look. And I, of course, know her from Austin and already had an affinity for her. So, you know, what was nice was they edited this out. But when I said, you do good, bad drag, basically, that there's bad drag, there's bad, bad drag, and good, bad drag, and you do good, bad drag. You know, I think Christine, Dina Martina, you know, a lot of us, and we've talked about this on the show before, appreciate really good, bad drag. And she said, her response was, that compliment coming from you is maybe the best compliment I've ever gotten. And I wish they had put it in the show, because I don't want there to be any confusion about that being a compliment.
Yeah, Peaches Christ needs to be canceled.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whatever. Bring it on.
She just doesn't get Louisiana Purchase.
How dare you?
Is that what they're saying? See, I don't read any of this.
No, I can just imagine somebody wants to start a fight, they'll look for something.
You know? Oh, they all do. I mean, even that, I was blocking people on Instagram because, you know, this woman from San Francisco who hates me is like, you know, posting that, you know, I sent Yovska home and, you know, I don't get great art. And it's like, okay, asshole. First thing you should know about reality TV is the guest judges have no control over anything. You know, like we've no say in the decision. We just offer our critiques and then what's done is done. You know, but so it's like as soon as the episode started being out there, you know, you start getting mostly nice compliments. The vast majority are friendly and nice and sweet. Mm-hmm. And then a few that just want to start something. They just want to get a reaction out of you. Mm-hmm. So my reaction is to just go to that block button.
Well, Fausto, like we were watching you in the episode, and he goes, Fausto's looking at you and says to me, he goes, Peaches' drag aesthetic for this show is she's a 14-year-old girl who stayed up too late.
Well, because you're wearing pajamas.
No, I'm wearing a dress, you fool.
It looks from the top up like a pajama.
How am I wearing pajamas? It's a dress with a belt.
It looks like
we only see you sitting. We don't know what you're wearing.
Oh, right. Oh, I never thought of that.
Because the top looks very cozy.
And I'm like, she's smart because she wants to stay warm in this cold studio.
No. It's a dress.
Okay.
You might not be able to tell, but there's... Well, can you tell?
No, it just looks like a pajamas. You're wearing pajamas. It's got
monsters on it, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like a tribute to sort of the classic Halloween costume monsters that used to be printed on aprons.
Well, specifically the artist Ben Cooper.
Exact for the Cooper costumes.
Who created those masks. Yes. And so the print is... So, you know, for me, I had that fabric for a while. And I thought, well, what better show to wear it on, you know, but a show about monsters.
Mm. Well, and it is cotton, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that was like, I was like, it looks really comfortable and cozy. And I was like, I almost thought you were going to pull out a pillow and a teddy bear.
But you also had the expression on your face is like, you were so, like, mesmerized by it, too. Like, you were just like, you were
really, in dreamland. I really was thrilled to be there. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with the queens. Mm. I was glad that they brought me into an earlier episode because that means I get to see more of them. You know, if you're judging a later episode, you're obviously seeing less of them. Mm-hmm. And I did not know that Henry Rollins would be my co-judge until I arrived in LA. And that truly, I mean, I was gobsmacked, you know, to find out that my co-judge was Henry Rollins because, you know, he is a really important punk rock god. And a lot of what he said when I was in high school, because he did spoken word, and we used to share these cassette tapes of his, a lot of what he said had tremendous meaning for me, almost more so than Black Flag or the music. It was like, this was a straight, masculine, muscular, hairy, punk rock and roll guy speaking out against bullying and homophobia. And so I got to thank him in person for that. And he is the real deal. Like, we spent, you know, all day on that set together, and I just am in love with him. He's amazing.
He is amazing. And I feel like, you know, for that era, like, we have a lot of advocates now, but back in the day is like, he was one of the few.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said to him, like, cause I said, well, you know, I grew up in Maryland and this and that. And then, you know, because he's from DC, I said something like, yeah, I used to have to go into DC to go to Smash or Commander Salamander just to get like Manic Panic or, you know, Doc Martens. Like, we didn't have that shit in the suburbs. And then he really realized, like, oh, you're really, really from there. Like, we know the same places. And I said, you know, he told me that his parents were assholes and he basically ran away. His father, I mean, he's pretty open about this in his work. Like, his father's just was an abusive monster, and that he ended up working at the Bijou, which was this movie theater in Georgetown that was still around when I was growing up. Like, my parents went on a date at the Bijou. Mm-hmm. I think my mom saw The Exorcist there, you know, and Henry Rollins worked there. And what he said was he was a teenager who worked essentially with all gay men, like the managers, the staff, like everyone that worked at this theater was gay. And he told me, he was like, and those are the people that taught me how to be a man, not my father.
Henry, so beautiful. Henry Rollins says, if you hate your parents, the man or the establishment, don't show them up by getting wasted and wrapping your car around a tree. If you really want to rebel against your parents, outlearn them, outlive them, and know more than they do.
Yeah. And he said, he was like, yeah, I don't even know if my parents are still alive. He said that. I was, so if I look like I'm full of joy on the video or whatever, I really was. I was so excited to be there. And when the monsters came out to see Hollow Eve, Madeline Hatter, Louisiana Purchase, you know, it was like, I was thrilled because I knew a bunch of those people, you know, and I've been a fan of Landon Siders for a long time. So I was really excited, like, wow, you know, the Boulez are really, they're just bringing it. And it's very much a representation of the drag world that I enjoy, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great that Henry Rollins is still getting involved in sort of grassroots projects like this and wants to hang out with, you know, the a show that literally is the contest for the world's next drag super monster. Because a lot of celebrities, I can't see Laurie Anderson doing that. You know what I'm saying? It's like it takes a deep understanding of the camp aesthetic and of horror culture and queer culture to really appreciate what Dragula is. And it's not for everybody. And a lot of very established drag queens are not going to get it. They're going to see just basically Fear Factor with drag.
In many ways, it is right. Fear Factor with drag.
You know, Henry Rollins is somebody who, as a performance artist in my generation, was somebody who was very inspiring, not just because of his embracing of a countercultural aesthetic, but also saying, you know, your body is for you to control and to reclaim. And lifting weights at the gym is actually something really important that you can do to love yourself as a queer person, as a misfit, as any marginalized person. He wrote this very, very famous poem about the iron, which I'll paraphrase here for you guys. The iron never lies to you. You can walk outside and listen to all kinds of bullshit, get told that you're a god or you're a total bastard. The iron will always kick you the real deal. Friends come and go, but 200 pounds is always 200 pounds.
Right.
I mean, he still looks fit, right?
Oh, yeah. He's so handsome and charismatic and just comfortable in his own skin. And I mean, he would get very deep very quickly about traveling around the world. And I don't know. I think he's kind of operating on a different level as far as consciousness goes. Like he's like so not a celebrity. Like he wants to immediately connect with you in this very real way that I would say is spiritually elevated from most people I've met. And I don't know how to describe it other than that's just how he's going through life. And I was completely inspired getting to spend the day with him because, of course, the Boulets are super busy. They're doing their thing and the girls are busy. So, you know, when you're co-judging, you're basically sitting in a corner together.
And you're like flirting with him. And
did he flex his muscles for you?
Maybe I look like a teenage girl because I was like, I felt like I was a teenage girl all over again, you know, back in high school, just like I was smitten. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess I've had a crush on him since I was like probably 14, you know.
Oh, I remember that Time magazine article with him and he's screaming. You remember that famous photo of him? He's like screaming and he's shirtless and you're just like, this is the man I want to marry.
Yeah, exactly.
How exciting was that?
Who are you rooting for? Louisiana?
Well, we're rooting for Louisiana. We know Louisiana. We've invited her on for other projects.
Well, she came on the podcast, but you know, we actually had a little lunch date with her and her husband, right?
Partner.
I think they got married.
But yeah, they're married. I just don't know if they consider themselves by the male gender.
Yeah, that's true. They could be wives.
Non-binary.
So they're spouse.
Lesbian lovers.
I'm going to be performing with them very soon.
And they're two of my favorite people in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about these kind of projects. And we said,
I had just come back from my reality TV show, All for Norga, and she was talking about, you know, Dracula, and she thought, well, I don't know if I really want to do it or not. And Faust and I are just like, listen, these guys seem like they're great. It seems like it's a great show. I was just on a reality show. I had a very positive experience. I'm sure for you it can be a very positive experience. You know, go for it. She's just like, I don't know. But then later on she wrote to Faust and was just like, I credit with you for telling me to go on. Otherwise, I don't know if I would have.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know, isn't that sweet?
I'm really looking forward to performing with her and her husband and a bunch of other Austin queens in a few weeks. I'll be down there for Fantastic Fest.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so jealous.
What's Fantastic Fest?
It's actually a very important film festival that's in Austin, Texas that Tim Lee created, part of the Alamo Draft House. And it's a festival that features genre films. So there's a few of these festivals that are like kind of, you know, have grown into being really important festivals. There's one in Sitges, Spain called Sitges. Mm-hmm. There's one in Montreal, Fantasia. And then this is Fantastic Fest. And those are like the three big ones. And a documentary called Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street, is having its premiere there, which is strange because it's been previewing in every other film festival.
For like 3 years, right?
Yeah, the official premiere.
Hasn't this documentary been out for like 3 years? I feel like it has.
No, it has not been. Oh. Girl. They've been making it for 3 years, but it just started screening this year.
All right.
But anyway, the official premiere is at Fantastic Fest. And so they reached out to me to see if I would come and host a party that's in honor of that premiere. And then I'm doing a thing with Showgirls because I'm actually in a few documentaries that are playing there. I'm going to go down. And one of the things I'm doing is this Freddie number, and Louisiana is helping me with it.
Oh, that sounds really fun.
Yeah, I adore her.
What do you make about Hollow Eve? She's a cisgendered contestant who is making history as one of the first cisgender women to be competing in a drag television pageant, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two cis women in the show.
And then there's Landon Sider as well as a drag king.
Mm. Right.
And I guess Hollow Eve at the very beginning of the episode was just really adamant and angry about drag queens who use the word fish.
Uh-huh.
She's like, what is it
she's talking about? The pH balance.
The pH balance of vagina is not something to be laughed at and stuff. And with all this conversation about fish and women and sexism, you know, the fish originally started out as a symbol of pagans to worship the feminine, the divine. And it was not about the smell of the fish, but the shape of the fish in referencing the vagina. Christians stole it and use it for their Jesus fish that they stick on the back of their cars. But every time you see a Jesus fish, that is a shape of a vagina that they're worshiping, just turned onto its side. And for me, I want to support women in fighting for their equality. And that, if that means us not using the word fish, that I'm fine with that. But at the same time, I do want people to understand that Christian fundamentalists mm-hmm. stole this sacred feminine symbol from pagans. And by not using it, you're sort of giving up something beautiful and
well, why romantic. Don't you say you look like a goddess and not a fish? But but people are reacting to, you know, we've all been there for that drag show. And there's some woman, there's a drag queen up on stage and she's just trying to denigrate a woman by calling her, you know,
or saying
a fish,
she smells
and she's
funny.
Smelling fish. Yeah. And that's where most people are getting that reaction from.
I'll say this. I was so again, like showing up at Dragula and not knowing who was going to be on, I was really, really excited by the cast. And of course, Landon and Hollow are getting a certain amount of attention because it was long overdue. And I come from a drag community, and we've talked about this a lot in San Francisco, where, you know, the coquettes and the legacy of drag here has always been inclusive of really anyone that wants to do drag, regardless of whether you're a cis woman or male or trans, non-binary, whatever race, you know, age, you know, straight sexuality. I mean, you know, we had you know, drag performers who are straight performing with not just me, but it goes back decades. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize until I went out into the world and traveled a lot that actually was, you know, San Francisco is in a way unusual, that a lot of drag communities were a lot more rigid as far as how they defined drag and who could do drag and who couldn't do drag and who could be in this pageant and who couldn't be in this pageant. And you know, when Phonique, a cis woman, won the Miss Tranny Shack pageant a long time ago, outside of the bubble of San Francisco, it ended up being controversial. Like, and I remember me and Heclina kind of looking at each other and being like, wow, this is like a real thing. Like, people are upset that, you know, Phonique won. Like, that really surprised us because we just thought, you know, it's about the art of drag, not what you're...
Who wins or who loses?
Like what your genitalia, I was lucky. I was very lucky to grow up in that kind of community. I realize now. So it's really exciting to see the Boulets be inclusive of more people by having Landon and Hollow on. I think that conversation was exciting. I was excited to see Hollow address it. And I also feel like Hollow is outspoken, punk rock, eccentric in a very honest way that I really appreciate. I don't know. I've never worked with Hollow. I've only been a fan from afar in San Francisco, like admiring Hollow's performances and art. So I don't know Hollow personally. You know, we've never had a meal together. We've never worked on a show together. The drag scene in San Francisco is now so large that we can be fans of each other and not actually know each other, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, am getting to know Hollow in some ways through the show. And I am a big fan. Like, just, you know, from what I've seen, and I was a fan before, you know, Hollow and Fatima and some of the horror queens of San Francisco are still able to kind of like shock me, you know, and I feel like, you know, I've seen a lot.
Well, I'm sure you were pretty shocked when she stopped the performance and was like, I have to go fix this.
Yeah, I was shocked for other reasons. I felt like it was unfortunate for her. And I thought that the way that she owned it mm-hmm. was really, really admirable. You know, she knew as a performer she fucked up mm-hmm. and she was pissed off at herself and she was emotional. She was having a moment, as she said. And I was upset for her, the situation, because any of us could fuck mm-hmm. up. I mean, we all are able to fuck up. No one is above having a moment. We've all been there. We've all had a moment. But, you know, it just sucked for her because it was while they were being judged mm-hmm. and watched, and, you know, it threw her, you know, mm-hmm. it was Madeline basically was not supposed to pull out the needles when she did. I think it scared Hollow. I think it surprised Hollow, and, you know, they broke character and mm-hmm. that happens. But what a bummer, you know, because it was during the competition.
It's so frustrating when that happens in any show, isn't it?
Yeah, and I felt for them because, you know, they all, I mean, you can tell by watching the show, but especially when you're there, like, those queens are really working hard. I mean, to pull the they really don't have a ton of time to, like, rehearse, create their costumes. Like, you know, think about it. Like, I was blown away by the level of cohesion of the one band. You know, they didn't know what the challenge was. They didn't know who would be on each other's teams. Mm-hmm. It's not like they planned ahead, you know. Mm. They pulled those looks off together. I really am impressed with what they're able to do with such a short amount of time.
Are these queens like packing like one size fits all purpose kind of costume ideas in case they're like, oh, the next week is going to be Stepford Wife, or, you know what I'm saying?
See, like, I think, and I could be wrong, but yeah. I think that they obviously have an idea of what the runway is going to be. You know, so Hollow had that giant guar piece, and, you know, and like for the vampire challenge, I'm guessing that Landon had thought about his mariachi vampire, which I thought was so effing mm-hmm. genius. Oh my God. I'm a fangirl. I'm a fangirl for Dracula, and like, oh my God, I just like, so it's so great at my ripe old age to feel inspired by what young people are doing. I mean, I wanted to reach out to Landon and be like, let's make a fucking movie, you know, with that character, like a fucking mariachi vampire movie could be everything. So these monsters are, I mean, they're really delivering on a whole nother level.
Mm.
It's really refreshing and exciting, and if you haven't checked out the third season of Dracula, you're missing out.
Oh, and I don't want the listeners to think that I'm evading the question. I think if Hollow doesn't like the word fish, I think Hollow should be able to tell those queens that they don't like the word fish, mm-hmm. you know? And I think bringing that conversation up and having that conversation, I think it's exciting. I think it's great, and misogyny is real in the gay community. And, you know, if someone says that this thing offends them, well, let's talk about it, you know. And that, like Mark said, like, we've all seen the queen, that sort of tired trope of a queen getting on stage and talking about how disgusting they think vaginas are or whatever. Well, you know what? That's disgusting. It is misogyny, and it's tired, and it really, it's gross. It's not even funny. Who thinks that's funny?
I could think of a couple of drag queens you work with who think that's funny. But I'm just keeping my mouth shut. Yeah.
I'll say this about that.
Yeah.
There is a, and it's, I'm not making excuses,
yeah,
but there is a certain level of making fun of something that you know is wrong, and that the audience knows that you know it's wrong.
Mm.
And there was a time in the drag world where you could, this is going to sound really horrible, and I don't know how to explain it other than there, and this is New York, San Francisco, this was a lot of places, and it was certainly true of the drag world I grew up in, where I would see queens get on stage and hurl racially inappropriate things at each other, misogyny, you know, ageism, AIDS, AIDS humor. And in a lot of ways, I think there was this sort of understanding off stage that these groups of people were family and had this sort of understanding that like this was all not just permissible, but in a way celebrated.
And cathartic in some ways.
Cathartic, I think. Yeah. But again, the times have changed. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. Drag back then was so insular. The audience was in on the joke. They knew these people. You know, they were fans and friends of these people. So, you know, in San Francisco, when Timmy Spence would get up on stage and tell a bunch of AIDS jokes, you know, the audience knew this was someone who had been in the hospital four times and mm-hmm. almost, you know, passed or whatever. It was cathartic. It was morbid, but it was also the way that the community was dealing with shit. And so I think back on that and, you know, people, you know, certain drag queens that you might be referring to, you know, calling animatronic a fish, in a way that was derogatory, like shut up. I remember one time someone saying clam up fish. Anna would take that and spit something more awful and more hideous back at that drag queen. And it could have been about AIDS or something. Mm-hmm. And that was just sort of the darkness of that kind of comedy. It was understood that Anna was accepted fully and completely, you know.
That's how I always felt that animatronic from Scissor Sisters is like, you know, such a huge talent and really underrated in terms of like female pop stars.
I agree. I mean, of course, she's, you know, dear friend and I love her to death, but it's like, let's have a Kiki. That's Anna's song. Mm-hmm. You know, like she is...
Jake Shears finally admitted that the success of Let's Have a Kiki broke up the group, which I always said to Heckling.
He just said it recently because I always said
it's like that. Look, that the Scissor Sisters were huge in Europe, but had a really hard time breaking into the mainstream in the United States. And a lot of those songs were not written by animatronic, were Jake Shears, Del Mar Key, and Baby Daddy. And so when they had that hit song, and I mean, Glee covered it, you know, I can imagine that for a group of very strong, very talented people, it's not easy psychologically, and that can really bruise your ego.
It changes the power dynamics.
Yeah, it's like suddenly Miss Underrated Animatronic is writing the hit songs. What do you say about that, fellas? And I can imagine that that caused a lot of tension. That's why they took a hiatus, you know? And so for him to admit that, I think, is really encouraging because I think I love the Scissor Sisters and I want them to continue making amazing music. And if Let's Have a Kiki is the future of the Scissor Sisters, bring it on, honey. Let's have more Kikis.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's one of my favorite people I've ever met. You know, just a real down-to-earth, very funny, just genuinely outrageous, wise, and together person, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm sure Anna, I want Anna to, like, you know, write a book or do a one-woman show because I'm sure Anna would have plenty to say about the word fish. Mm. You know, and me personally... If you don't know where people's intention is coming from, like I remember once hearing a gay man say, he was sitting in a hot tub. We were all in the hot tub. A woman who was a friend of ours came and got in the hot tub. We're talking. And this queen is giving her the shittiest looks, you know, just being rude. And I'm noticing like, really? Like, you know, and this woman's a friend of ours, like, you know, lesbian. She gets out of the hot tub. He knows she's a friend of ours. And he says, I came to Guerneville to soak in a hot tub, not sit in clam chowder. You know? And I remember being like, God. You're the fucking queen that we're making fun of.
Oh, wow.
You know, at the end of the day, that's my friend. Mm. You know, like, this is real. You are disgusting. In our community, you know, there is misogyny 100%. And I think when people are, I mean, I'm trying to retire the word bitch from my vocabulary because if you're using that word to refer to a woman, I actually think, you know, maybe only use it to refer to men, you know. You know, I just feel like it's gross. You know, we still we're not living in an equitable society. As much as, you know, I would love to think that things have evolved more. I mean, one thing about our last election was just how eye-opening it was as far as the amount of women that voted for that monster. You know, to me, that's a real statement about self-hate and being raised to believe you are less than a man. And, you know, so things like the Women's March and girl power, it's crucial because, you know, I had pride parades to go to. I had a community that was able to like lift me up and say, no, you know what? You're not going to hell. You're not a filthy deviant. Well, maybe I am, but you're not, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. And I got to go to pride parades and I got to find value in myself through a community that helped to lift me up. And it's just so obvious that we need that sort of, movement for young women in this country. You know, they're still raised to believe that they're less than men. And that's really sad.
And I think, what is it like, most white women voted for Trump?
It's unreal to me. I really was clueless. I thought after he came out and said all that shit, and we knew what kind of man he was, we knew how he treated women, we knew how he thought of women. You know, just no respect for women. You know, he's basically, you know, admitted to wanting to fuck his own daughter. He's a fucking pig. He's a monster. And the fact that, and I thought to myself, oh, he'll never win. Because when all the mothers and sisters and grandmothers go into that voting booth, whether they do it for themselves or someone else, they're going to vote for the sisterhood, you know? And I was wrong. My God, boy, were we wrong.
Well, the Belay brothers are always very wise in a lot of the commentary that they give on the show. And also, it's really refreshing to see them sort of be very shady in a way that we don't see on other shows or contexts. It's, what is it that made you cackle with delight, Mark?
Well, like, they were like, well, we've divided you into groups already because we're smarter than you.
I know, right?
Those kinds of things that were wonderful. But you got your own things.
You got your three top. What is it that they said about the top three that to be eliminated? I can't remember what it was. But
we
can't
wait to eliminate you,
yeah,
or something.
Can't like, wait
to eliminate you.
But that, what really touched me was that when they said the scariest monster to defeat are the demons inside you. Where is that coming?
When, like, did they say that?
Oh, they said it in your episode, and I feel like, you know, there's a lot of great things that are uttered on that show, and I'm just like, where is this wisdom coming from? Because, you know, it's just something that I don't really see elsewhere, and I don't know if that's just like because fans of horror films are sort of like smarter than the average bear, or you know, I don't know what's going on.
Part of it's that the Belays are punk rock in a sense, and they're not afraid to sort of put themselves out there in this very, like, while there's all this artifice and you know, magic behind what they do, when they start talking and, you know, you see how they build their show and who they include and what they're doing, they're really not afraid to just follow the beat of their own drum. Like, this is the way we do it. This is what we like. This is who we are. This is our view of drag. And we're going to put it out there this way. And of course, you know, it's gotten great results because people really respond to it. They're excited by it.
It's not a clone of Drag Race. It's its own animal.
Yeah, with their own sort of philosophy around what drag is.
Although it's inevitable to comment on RuPaul's Drag Race. And for me, my favorite skit so far is when they murdered all the executives of Logo in a Mommy Dearest corporate boardroom gone to hell sequence from the second season. Oh, that was so satisfying to see that happen. And that's part of it too, is like, you know, as people inside our own community, we have frustrations with each other. And I feel like Dragula sort of addresses those head on in a very tongue in cheek way. You know, we don't really want to murder the Logo executives, but sometimes we feel like we want to, right? And to bring that to life and go this, you know, exaggerated comic book level of outrageousness with blood and gore and decapitations not, yeah. and bodies. And you know, the third season begins with them, you know, paying for their crimes. It's really, really fantastic.
I think the inclusion of, like you say, the fear factor element, but I love that there's also this sort of inclusion in the episodes of horror movies.
Yeah,
kind of opens and closes with a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do, I you know, we were tweeting back and forth, and basically, if they'll have me on for season four, I want to be the one to murder one of them.
I know. So everybody wants to murder the drag queen on Dragula.
I guess you're right. I guess I do want to murder a drag queen.
Were you happy with their decision of who they sent home?
You know, I'll say this, and I hope they don't get upset with me. The second season, I was really shocked by who they chose, and it is not who I think Coco or I were leaning toward, you know, on our episode. They sent home Erica Clash, and we actually thought she did quite well in the challenge. What you realize when you watch the season is it is cumulative, and it does make sense that for an audience watching, they're taking into consideration the episodes that led up to the one that I'm on. So I only see one episode, like one thing while I'm there. I think Yovska going home. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I thought it made sense. I love what he brought to the show. I wish I could see more of her look and everything. I thought her drag was really interesting, but I also agreed with the critiques from the first two episodes and the third episode, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a drag queen in L.A. who she called out Aaron Schock.
Are you familiar with him? He's our former Republican senator from Illinois. And
yes.
So
yes,
she was at a West Hollywood gay bar called Revolver. And, you know, like, Aaron Schock has some big cojones for showing his face up in a lot of gay events and circles, you know, because he's a persona non grata for voting against marriage equality, for being such a regressive, conservative Republican politician, for, you know, basically just stealing money left and right and getting away with it. And he's just like, you know, he almost in defiance, he goes out to gay events and he's like, what are you gonna do about it, huh?
Well, so he's closeted, right?
He's still closeted, but they've seen him at like Coachella with his hands down somebody's pants.
Making out.
And there was also like people have said, like, yeah, I saw him getting fucked in the shower at the gym, that kind of stuff. Here in Boys Town, people have said they've seen him out and about before.
I saw him on one of those hookup apps, and I was like trying to get his attention, you know?
Or somebody that looked like him.
Somebody looked like him. So, of course, he wasn't biting.
No. But so drag queen Johnny Reinhardt was performing, and she sees him in the audience, and she's like, what the fuck am I going to do? Should I go up and kick him out? And so she's like, well, I'm a performer, so I'm going to do what I do. And she goes, this song goes out to somebody who's in the audience, and it goes out to anybody who votes against gay rights. And it was Lily Allen's Fuck You.
Oh, wow. Good.
But you know,
thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you are actively voting against our best interests, and yet you still want to go out and get your dick sucked, that you should be fully shamed.
Well, now some reports are coming in that he's feeling like he's the victim now because he's been outed, and his parent, like, he hadn't had that conversation yet with his parents. And I'm like, your parents are like 60, 70 years old, I'm sure, because you're like 40 something, 38 or something. I don't know how old you are now. It's like, you should have had that conversation 20 years ago or something.
Yeah, not my problem.
Yeah, and you don't get, you know, if you vote against gay rights, you know, you get what's coming to you.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like, what do you expect? Like, really? You expect to be able to, like, fuck us over and not, you know, and then what, we're supposed to, you know, protect you? Fuck off. It's crazy. What a baby.
So how are things going with Into the Dark?
Really well. It's a race against the clock because, you know, we are 4 weeks out from opening our show, or a little less. I mean, maybe a day less than 4 weeks. And and we have a lot to do. So, you know, the shows are really ambitious. We have two attractions this year. We're bringing back our Terror Vault show, which is our big show. That's sort of an immersive theater experience. And then we're adding a second attraction, which is a zombie escape room game that's called Apocalypse. So it's a lot of work, but I'm very excited about it.
Are you having like a major celebrity attached to the project this year? Or am I just, did I dream that?
There was photos of you and Coco Peru on a book cover or something.
That's right.
What, that's
yes.
what you're thinking of.
I guess it was a dream because I thought Coco Peru is a major celebrity. But no, but is Coco going to be involved somehow or?
No. I think so there's some sort of Coco fan who makes these brilliant like mystery book covers, like she's Nancy Drew or something. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to get Coco to come up and like, I want to film her going through the Terror Vault.
That would be good.
Yeah.
This bothers me.
Stop screaming videos. So much. Oh my God. This is stressful. I have to sit
down.
Well,
she did it with another haunt.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. So of course it wasn't even an original idea. It's like this hilarious video of her going through this haunt and being like, no, stop it. And, you know, I really want her to come and do Terror Vault.
Oh, that'd be incredible.
So, but no, she's not in the show. But there are some local queens in the show this year that are exciting when people hear that Rhea Light is in the show, Peggy Ooh. Legs is in the show. So some of the queens, more established queens in the city, are actually in the Terror Vault this year. Actually, if you watch our Terror Vault commercial, there's a character called Grandma in the commercial, and that's Rhea Light, you know.
Are you going to have a strawberry shortcake taking your clothes off?
I would love it if Strawberry would be in the show, but she'd need to relocate to San Francisco.
Oh, because she's in Seattle. And it takes a month, right? Or how long does that event go for?
Yeah, it's October 10th to November 10th.
And how many performances a day?
36.
And last year you did it all, every performance, right?
Yeah, this year I'm not.
So that's 36 times, I mean, that's...
Oh, I forget what it was. It was like, I think I did the same scene 400-something times.
Wow.
Or 500 times or
and
something.
And you saved money by not hiring Heclina. Instead, you replaced her with a flaming bag of poop.
Yes.
And people are like, she's even improved this year. Mm. No.
Yeah.
But so what's going to happen when you're not there? Are people going to be like, where's Peaches Christ?
No, I don't think so. What was interesting last year was that I was in the show and a lot of people didn't know it was me that were Peaches fans. Then the Peaches fans that did know it was me kind of would wreck the scene a little bit. Because they'd be like, yes, queen. It's like, that's not scary. Okay.
That is fucking hilarious, though.
Yeah. Well, I came down in an elevator with dry ice and I have a very dramatic, you know, entrance. And, you know, pretty ambitious scene. But the biggest problem was that unlike a regular show, like when I do a show on stage where I'm in it, I can watch rehearsals. Yeah. I can watch the show. I can see it. I can give notes. I can actually like be part of it. Whereas last year I was locked in this one room, the Satanic Sanctum. I never saw the show. I never saw the show that I wrote, you know, and I never was able to offer feedback. And as a producer and writer and someone who's supposed to be directing basically outside of rehearsals, I never directed. I mean, it was very, very frustrating. And so this year I'll do the publicity and the interviews and anything where I'm needed as Peaches to help launch the project. But I'm going to be on site as Joshua behind the scenes, actually really, you know, working as a director, you know.
David, more blood on section B2 now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The skull's not clacking.
That's actually not my job. That's someone else's job, but I'm more in charge of the actors. Mm-hmm. And both parts, the scenic stuff, the effects, the lights, the sound, the scenery, that they are incredibly important to this kind of theater, this kind of immersive experience. But equally as important is the performance of the actors who are in those sets. So, you know, my job is to really like help the actors get to where they need to be. And so I think that, you know, this is a better choice as far as how to use me. You know, last year, I would say a large number of people they weren't the Peaches Christ audience. You know, so it was kind of like it could have been any queen in there and they would, you know, it didn't matter. You know, in like I said, when the Peaches fans did come through, they kind of ruined the scene. So, you know.
Yes, queen.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of like, oh, Miss Peaches, hey, girl. People being like, will you sign that? I'm like, it was.
Asking for an autograph while you're holding a decapitated
kind
head.
Kind of.
In your hand.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, and, you know, it's like. Because for one, I'm right up in their faces. It's not like I'm on stage. I'm like in their faces. I'm touching them, you know?
That would be sort of a funny idea in a horror film if, you know, Freddy from Nightmare on Elm Street was like a celebrity and people wanted his autograph and he.
Right.
Peaches, it's so good talking to you. I absolutely love seeing.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys.
I dream one day of going to San Francisco and being horrified by your drag once again.
Yeah, I hope you can make it down to the Terror Vault someday.
For sure. Have you seen it yet, Chapter 2?
Not yet, no, okay. But I will.
Okay. We'll come back and talk about it when
you have you seen it?
I have seen it. It's not as scary as the first one because I think there's something about having kids in the movie. You kind of feel protective of them. And so you get drawn into their world more. But the second one is, you know, it's campy. It's fun. There is the queer bashing in it in the beginning, which is true to the book.
I heard it was intense.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. And it was just kind of like, I think if you were ever in that kind of experience, it was like you wouldn't make yourself vulnerable in that situation, I think. But maybe, right. I don't know. It was interesting. But, you know, it's part of that whole spooky world. But there was a lot of campy fun in it, for sure.
Well, I'm excited to see it.
I think you'll like it.
Yes. Unpleasant dreams. That's Elvira, not you. But.
Yeah, I know.
All right, darling. Thank you very much for doing the podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
okay?
You guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Peaches Christ lives in San Francisco, California. One of a kind drag queen, drag legend, Terror Vault.
You can check that out at intothedarksf.com.
And it's starting soon.
It's October 10th through November 10th.
How exciting. I wish I was in San Francisco to get hot frightened by Peaches.
I know. So scary.
I just keep a photo of her in my wallet.
Every time you need a little fright.
Little pick me up.
Oh, there you go. They actually say, what is it that being scared a little bit is good for you, right?
I'm thrilled right now just talking to her, you know?
It just stimulates
your mind.
Woke
me up. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I hope our podcast wakes you guys up. We're like the cup of glorious queer culture, a celebration of the ridiculous and the queer and the outrageous in life. And we hope that we delivered the goods. Honey. Remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you.
Become a Plus member today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. You can also join us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
You say that again? Patreon? We're on Patreon?
We are on Patreon at Feast of Fun.
Girl, is this where we got to see like naked photos of you?
No, that's my only for fans coming soon. But don't hold your breath.
Patreon is a great way to sort of get a lot to enter a world of fun. You get some of the best podcasts we've ever done reposted there.
Should we repost the first podcast we did with Peaches there?
Why not?
It was our blind date.
It was a blind date.
Because we didn't know her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We had no idea who is this Peaches Christ character? And what is she all about? Who are you? And what does it do? And what is it good for? And there was love at first sight. Fright.
Boo.
Boo. We want to thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.